Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Raw Conversations. This week, continuing our classic conversations this early spring, Fleetwood Mac is our featured artist. You know, Christy McVie died late last year at age 79. We're going to feature some of their best music this week and also have some other features for you. Local rock expert Frank Ost is here. We're going to have that for you in just a second. I'd like to remind you, though, we're going to start with Season 8. Hall & Oates will be our featured artist as we kick things off in early May. Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversation. So, Fleetwood Mac is our featured artist as we head back to one of our early episodes, Season 1, Episode 9. Hall of Fame inductees will begin our conversations, and we're down to 2012, a year that really they did some cleanup. There are some backup bands and some backing vocal groups that were overlooked in the past, and there was controversy about that. The Miracles were not inducted with Smokey Robinson. The Crickets were not inducted with Buddy Holly. So they cleaned it up. The Crickets came in, the Miracles, the Comets, Bill Haley's band, the Midnighters, the backing band of Hank Ballard, Gene Vincent's band, the Blue Caps, and the backing vocal group for James Brown, the Famous Flames, all inducted that year. So the E Street Band was coming a couple years later.
Exactly, yeah, and that's something you brought to my attention. I never knew that this was kind of a cleanup year.
Yeah, I just kind of stumbled on that myself when I saw how many artists Smokey Robinson introduced that night, and he did all those, including the Miracles. Donovan, what'd you think?
Oh, I like Donovan. Sorry, don't agree with Bob Dylan on this one. I know Bob was not a big fan, but I truly did like his material, and thought he did a lot of good stuff. In the short time that he was in the forefront, it's only two or three years that he really took the forefront, but I thought he did very well.
Hurdy Gurdy Man, Atlantis, yeah. Wear Your Love Like Heaven, the commercial for Wella Balsam shampoo.
Color in sky, brush and blue, scarlet fleece changes hue. Crimson ball sinks from view. Wear your love like heaven. Sky rose carmethine, alizarian crimson.
Sunshine Superman.
Sunshine Superman, yeah. Jennifer Juniper. All those songs were light, they're airy, a little bit of psychedelic in there.
Absolutely.
I liked them a lot. I think Bob Dylan, you know, maybe a little jealousy going in there.
Could be.
Bob had gone electric by then and saw Donovan and maybe thought, you know, maybe that's a younger version of myself. Maybe I could have written a couple of those tunes, even though he was one of the best songwriters of all time.
Exactly.
What'd you think of the Beastie Boys?
Never been a huge fan of the Beastie Boys, but I do know of them, and I do know they have some big hits, and you can't get away from them at, you know, football games and such.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Beastie Boys. Don't know why they were in. Don't know why they got nominated even.
Exactly.
I don't even know when they were around. Late 80s? I mean, why not just induct Milli Vanilli?
Exactly.
Guns N' Roses, introduced by members of Green Day. What'd you think?
Now, that, of course, is a far better rock band, and played a lot of good music, enjoyed their lot of their stuff, especially like November Rain, and, of course, Sweet Child of Mine. Can forget those.
Paradise City. Knocking on Heaven's Door, talking about Bob Dylan tune. Didn't they do a cover of that?
Yes, they did.
And they were what I put in the category of mine, known as screechy artists. AC/DC hit the bill.
Yeah.
Aerosmith sometimes, except for Beth. I wasn't a big Guns N' Roses fan until they were inducted, and I kind of forced myself to listen to some of their tunes. And little did you know, I liked them.
Good.
I like Guns N' Roses.
That's
Axl Rose
stuff.
Was not a part of those ceremonies, but that's a whole other story.
Oh,
we've
yeah,
already talked
definitely
about that. Don Kirshner, the music publisher and producer for the Monkees, the Archies, and Kansas. So it wasn't just Bubblegum. And, of course, produced Don Kirshner's rock concert, which aired for years and years and years.
Yeah, that was kind of a legendary show that was on the weekends, I believe. Probably Saturday nights, was it? I'm not sure.
I believe it was.
Great show.
They had Midnight Special, Don Kirshner's rock concert.
Exactly.
Everybody was there. Eric Carmen, Alice Cooper, Seals and Crofts, The Eagles, Steve Miller, Allman Brothers. I mean, he only paid the act's scale, but they figured the publicity that were garnered through those performances would be worth it. And
absolutely.
He let them perform live as opposed to lip-syncing or something edited down. They liked that. Red Hot Chili Peppers. They're okay. You know, they're better than the Beastie Boys, I gotta tell you.
Absolutely.
But not in the same group as Guns N' Roses. I think Red Hot Chili Peppers are really good to listen to when you're sitting in a bar and you can listen to music when it's not too late at night or something. Say you get in there, I don't know, happy hour or something.
Absolutely.
It's this nice background beat music, you know.
Their album Blood Sugar Sex Magik is a terrific album.
Small Faces and Faces, Ronnie Lane, Ronnie Wood, also of the Rolling Stones. Now, Steve Marriott left the group in 1969 to join Humble Pie, so they added Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood and shortened the name to Just Plain Old Faces. What'd you think of them?
Another excellent group. Very, not much is known about them. They kind of snuck in there, and because they had a couple of different names and a couple of different lead singers, really nobody knows a whole lot about them, except maybe Ronnie Wood, who came out of there to play lead guitar for the Stones. But excellent group.
So Frankie, Phil Spector passed away last weekend at age 81. He wrote the song by the Teddy Bears, which went to number one. To Know Him Is to Love Him. He produced and co-wrote stuff from Ike and Tina Turner, the Ronettes, the Crystals. He worked with the Wrecking Crew, the famed session band out of L.A. Did some solo stuff with George Harrison and John Lennon. In fact, he insisted that George Harrison release the song My Sweet Lord, which a few years got George into some trouble.
Absolutely.
Phil Spector, unusual man, wasn't he, Frankie?
You have to separate, in this case, the man from the producer, because the producer was a great talent, and there's no denying that he had a hand in a lot of great stuff. The Let It Be album, of course, and, you know, Imagine.
Created that wall of sound.
Absolutely. But as a human being, I don't think he was so successful.
No, he wasn't. That's where the unusual part comes in. He wrote the songs or produced, co-produced Spanish Harlem and the Righteous Brothers' early hits, You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin', Unchained Melody, the other number one, Soul and Inspiration. So he had a really good career, and some people liked that wall of sound, others didn't. Paul McCartney, not too crazy about the way Let It Be came out, which is why years later in 2002 and 3 he enlisted the help of some producers over there, and they redid Let It Be because he did not like that big sound of that album, did he?
Exactly. They called it Let It Be Naked because they basically stripped it of, you know, the wall of sound.
Yeah, interesting. Also on that album, which we talked about earlier, I think it was the last one that I purchased as a CD before I started downloading music. They actually used some different takes from some of the songs that were on there from George Harrison and even Paul McCartney. I think Long and Winding Road was a different take they used for the Let It Be Naked CD.
The Long and Winding Road. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here.
So Phil Spector passed away, age 81. Spotlight year 1979, we talked about how in the past, like this reminded me of 1963. We talked about how weird that year was and something big was coming the next year. And in 1980, the new wave was coming in with all the British bands, but also some American bands like The Knack, Journey, even Billy Joel. It wasn't just a British rocker thing. You know, the Clash were around and the Sex Pistols and the Psychedelic Furs and stuff like that. But
that's right.
In 1979, I believe that people had their fill of disco music. I know I did. I mean, how much can you listen to Anita Ward and Ring My Bell and Amy Stewart and Knock on Wood and Peaches and Herb and blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, I can't see many people sitting around today listening to their 1979 disco records. It just doesn't wash with me.
Doesn't add up. But they did have some top albums, some rockers, In Through the Outdoor, and little did we know that would be Zeppelin's last album.
Yeah, they didn't know it when they made it, but boy, what a great album it was.
The Eagles, also their last studio album. I know for Hell Freezes Over, they recorded some studio tracks, but that was 15 years later. The Long Run came out in late 1979. What'd you think?
Well, I think the title says it all. It was a long run for them to get the album done, and especially following up Hotel California. I mean, how can you follow that up?
We talked about Billy Joel, how he would really help in the 80s. I wasn't a big Billy Joel 80s music fan, but I did like 52nd Street. That was a really good album,
yes,
great follow-up to The Stranger.
Absolutely, great album.
Styx tried to follow up their biggest album, their peak, The Grand Illusion, with the album called Cornerstone. It did hit platinum three times.
That's right.
Babe and Lights and some good tunes on that album. But you could see where the band was kind of getting tired of Dennis DeYoung and his Babe and his schmaltz. And
right,
they were
exactly
heading in different directions. I like the album, but for me, at a college radio station that played rock music, there wasn't much fit for that album, which is too bad because
exactly,
it was a good album, just not great to me.
Mm-hmm.
Foreigner and Head Games. What do you think about Foreigner as a band overall?
Excellent band. I had seen them a couple of times in concert, so I do know that they can rock the house, that's for sure. And Head Games was an excellent album.
Michael Jackson's Off the Wall came out that year with Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, Rock With You. It was a great talk about, great for the dance halls. I didn't consider it a disco album by any means because
no,
trade little songs. They had some good tunes on there.
Absolutely, and we could see what was coming in the future, that's for sure. You listen to that album and you can hear all the little thoughts of what would come excitingly in a couple of years with Thriller.
You could see, too, what was coming, The Police with Dream Police, Blondie, came out with Parallel Lines that featured Heart of Glass. These bands were big in the 80s, weren't they? Joe Jackson's I'm the Man. The Cars, Candy O, their follow-up. That's a great album.
That is a great album.
Journey's Evolution, Eve by Alan Parsons Project, and Bob Dylan's Slow Train Comin', all part of what happened. Top albums in 1979, good year. For those, notice I didn't mention any of those that were disco. Bee Gees had Spirits Having Flown there. They had to put out a studio album after that great success of Saturday Night Fever, and they had Too Much
That's
Heaven
right.
and Tragedy and Spirits Having Flown. Love You Inside and Out. Those were all big hits. The first two I mentioned were number ones, but the Bee Gees and Donna Summer had such a big year in 1979, but I contend that part of what made 1980 so good and anti-disco was the Bee Gees and Donna Summer didn't release anything
Absolutely,
that year.
Absolutely, you're right.
So it allowed for a cooling off period of disco. Top debut artists, 1979, we ended the decade very well with a couple of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, John Cougar Mellencamp, back then just known as Johnny Cougar, Pat Benatar, and Blondie. Blondie, great addition to the Rock Hall, to the rock scene, 1979.
Absolutely.
Top disco songs, can't talk about 1979 without including Do You Think I'm Sexy? That's how we started.
Yeah, there you go, Mr.
One.
Rod Stewart. Rod the Bod.
Inescapable. You can still hear it anywhere you go on the hit stations. Donna Summer had those back-to-back number ones, Bad Girl and Hot Stuff, followed by MacArthur Park.
That's
like
right.
Like we needed 7 minutes of that. Sister Sledge, We Are Family, the theme song to the 79 Pittsburgh Pirates. That was an okay tune, summertime
That's
song.
That's right.
Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive. Village People, Not Once But Twice, graced us with YMCA, followed by In the Navy.
Yeah, and you can't go anywhere and not hear those, a football game or any kind of sporting event.
The Bee Gees now, I've really wrestled with whether or not to have them as our featured artists. They had such success in the 70s, but they started out in the 60s with songs like I Started a Joke and Massachusetts, New York Mining Disaster, 1941, some great stuff, and then it led into a quick breakup. But then how do you mend a broken heart and My World and great songs in the mid-70s too, like Jive Talkin', You Should Be Dancing, and then Saturday Night Fever and Spirits Having Flown. But there's a really good documentary, if you can check it out on HBO, it's been airing recently, about the Bee Gees and how the disco sucks and the end of the disco era all tied in with how they had to take a little break, at least from performing, but not from songwriting. So if you get a chance, check that out. So anyway, they had big hits in 1979, following up Saturday Night Fever, Too Much Heaven, Tragedy, Love You Inside and Out, which wasn't a disco hit, but still a big hit for them nevertheless. Chic and La Freak. Dumb song, but they did have a couple of good ones later on. Good Times.
Absolutely.
And I Want Your Love, produced by Nile Rodgers, who we've spoken about in the past. Was not a fan of disco. I'm sure you weren't either, Frankie.
No, definitely. Don't take me to the disco.
I think I've seen exactly zero of those artists we mentioned in concert. Maybe the Bee Gees on a PBS special or something.
Right, exactly.
And I don't consider them truly a disco group by any means, but they just hit it big with that Saturday Night Fever and the falsetto sound of Barry Gibb, and it was cool while it lasted. Disco Demolition Nights, followed by what I thought knocked disco right out of the park, was My Sharona, the number one song for the entire year of 1979 by the LA group The Knack.
Really liked that song, although they really didn't follow it up with much. They had a couple of small hits after that.
Good Girls Don't in the fall.
Exactly. But actually saw them in concert down at the Public Hall. And, of course, it was at the time that Sharona was number one. And they did a good job. But, again, sorry to say, they really didn't follow it up with anything.
They didn't. Doug Feger passed away in 2010. His brother Greg was known as one of the attorneys for Jack Kevorkian during his assisted living cases. Blondie's Heart of Glass. What'd you think?
Good album. Kind of put a different spin on disco. It had a feel of dance music, but it was different dance music. It wasn't just the direct kind of thump, thump, thump of disco.
Yeah, Debbie Harry had a little attitude, didn't she?
Exactly.
Blonde hair preceded Madonna. Maybe that's where a little of Madonna got, maybe a little bit of her. Then came Rapture a couple of years later, maybe 1981, I believe. That was regarded as one of the first rap songs, so Blondie had a little bit something to do with that. The Cars, Let's Go, Journey, Lovin', Touchin', Squeezin', The Doobie Brothers, and What a Fool Believes.
Yeah, that was a big one for them.
The Minute by Minute album.
Mm-hmm.
The Doobies will tell you, and they did at their induction ceremonies back in November, the virtual ones for the Rock Hall, that What a Fool Believes took over 50 takes to accomplish, and they wound up using one of the early ones. I didn't think it was that great of an album, but the tunes were okay. What a Fool Believes, and, you know, Minute by Minute, they had a hard time following that up too, although they sure tried.
They sure did.
Ian Hunter, Cleveland Rocks, Supertramp, big group that year. Anything by them, you still hear. The Logical song, Goodbye Stranger. I still like
Breakfast in America.
I still like that song whenever I hear Breakfast in America.
Great.
Always listen to it.
Great tune.
The Jacksons, Shake Your Body, Joe Jackson, and Ricky Lee Jones with Chucky's in Love, Nicolette Larson, the Neil Young song, Lot of Love, John Stewart, a little help from Stevie Nicks, and Gold.
Gold, that's right.
You know what I really liked about Michael Jackson? We talked about him a little bit here and there over the course of our episodes, but this album of his, Off the Wall, you could tell he was taking his solo career very seriously. He teamed up with the right people and had the right songs at the right time, too. So as disco was fading away, he was the king of pop into the 80s and 90s, and right up until the time of his death, he's still a big seller in the last 11 or 12 years following his tragic death. But Michael Jackson's music was going to stand the test of time, and it was not, I thought, a true disco album with Rock With You and Off the Wall and Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, many others. All terrific songs and great to dance to. And really, to this day, you can still put it on and just enjoy the music, which was followed up by that tremendous album of his, Thriller, a couple years after this. Bad Company, Rock and Roll Fantasy, Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing, Styx, ELO, Van Halen, Firefall, Earth, Wind, and Fire. All rounded out a really good roster of songs.
Absolutely.
After the Love Is Gone, Boogie Wonderland. That song featured the Emotions as a backup group. And Robert John, remember Sad Eyes?
Sad Eyes. I do remember that.
The big hit with Lion Sleeps Tonight, and took like a decade and a half off, and then came back with that big hit in the fall, late summer. And it's funny, we talked about this before, there's nothing that makes you feel more upbeat in the summertime than a nice melancholy song like Alone Again
there
Naturally, or something like Rainy Days and Mondays, Sad Eyes by Robert John. Yeah. Fast becoming one of my favorite segments, Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations featuring Frank Ost. Not so great songs. 1979. Pop Music, number one, by M. Don't know what M stands for, but Pop Music was a big hit.
It's a little earworm.
Randy Van Warmer, Just When I Needed You Most. Rupert Holmes ended the year with the song which you still can't escape, called Escape.
Escape.
Frank Mills and Music Box Dancer.
Oh, I remember that song.
Ian Matthews, Shake It. And Dr. Hook's When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman. All big hits, 1979. One-hit wonders, we got a few of them. One was Nick Lowe and Cruel to Be Kind. That went to number 12 in the summer. He went on to join the group called Rockpile a year later with Dave Edmonds. What'd you think of that song?
That's a great song. In fact, I saw him do that at the Beachland Ballroom, of all places.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Written by Nick Lowe and Ian Gomm. Ian has distinction of writing two one-hit wonders. Hold On, which was out in the fall that year. It also went to number 18. Gomm toured with Dire Straits on that Sultans of Swing tour and co-wrote Cruel to Be Kind. Driver's Seat, Sniffin' the Tears, which you still hear on rock and roll stations across the country.
What a great driving song that is.
Sure is. Number 5 in the nation in the fall. That was a British new wave band. I wouldn't really consider them new wave, but I only heard that song, so.
Exactly. We don't know what else they had cooking over there.
And the East Coast answer to Boston was a group called New England. Remember Don't Ever Want to Lose Ya?
I do remember that song now that you mention it.
One of the greatest openings of all time, along with Long Cool Woman by the...
That's right. That's right.
AC/DC, Highway to Hell. New England's Don't Ever Want to Lose Ya came out in the spring. It hit number 40. It's produced by Mike Stone, who also produced Journey's Escape album. He also produced stuff by Lou Reed, Joe Walsh. He was an engineer for some of Queen's biggest albums, Bohemian Rhapsody. So they had some oomph behind that album, and it really didn't do anything. And New England fizzled. Right.
Yeah, you would have thought that would have been perfect for the times, but...
He also worked with Roy Thomas Baker to create that layered sound that you heard on the masterpieces like Bohemian Rhapsody, Somebody
Absolutely.
To Love, and the stuff from the supergroup Asia. Remember them? 1982?
I do remember them.
One of these days we'll hit on Asia and supergroups in general.
Asia featuring Carl Palmer as their drummer.
They're a good one. That brings us up to our featured artist this time around in Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations featuring Frank Ost. Fleetwood Mac, Hall of Fame inductees 1998, the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Speaking of people easy on the eyes, Stevie Nicks, to me, was right up there with Linda Ronstadt and Olivia.
Absolutely.
Some of their former members include Bob Welsh, who passed away not too long ago. He left the band right before Stevie and Lindsey joined. Peter Green wrote that great song, Oh Well, which is still a favorite in concert.
Right, and he also wrote Black Magic Woman, I believe.
Great tune. Jeremy Spencer, Bob Bruning, Danny Kerwin, Bob Weston, some of those names you may or may not know. They were early 70s, late 60s.
It's the same kind of story that seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of a playing field.
John McVie joined in 1967. His wife, Christine, joined a couple years later and retired from the band and from performing in like 1990, then came back and then
right.
retired again. Now she's back.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsey Buckingham joined the band in 1974, 75, right in there. He wanted Stevie along with him,
which was
a good idea.
Yep, absolutely.
Mick Fleetwood, an original member. Mike Campbell was named to replace Lindsey Buckingham a couple years ago. Lindsey had health problems shortly thereafter. He had heart trouble, and the surgery he had rendered him without a voice for a while. Hopefully he's doing better these days. I haven't really heard how Lindsey's doing lately. And with the whole thing with the COVID, the touring is just off.
But yeah, exactly.
Lindsey was replaced by not one but two guitarists on tour. Mike Campbell, formerly of Tom Petty, who co-wrote many of their hits like Refugee and Running Down the Dream, Here Comes My Girl, and also co-wrote Don Henley's Boys of Summer.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Me either. Neil Finn from Split Enz and Crowded House also provided TV and film soundtrack work for some shows like Boston Legal, The Waiting Game, and Ants, and Sports Night. So he wrote some TV and some movie stuff too. So he and Mike Campbell are replacing Lindsey Buckingham. I guess doing a fine job. Fleetwood Mac was supposed to come around to Cleveland, but
And Lindsey Buckingham is a terrific guitarist, which probably is the reason that it takes two people to, you know, fill in for him. But no doubt about it, he was a fantastic guitarist. And of course, we wish him the best. I hope everything with his voice goes well.
Sold over 120 million albums worldwide, probably all with Rumors.
Exactly.
Or their Fleetwood Mac album. Other albums they had, Penguin and Bear Trees and Tusk, 1979. So Rumors sold more than 40 million albums. It was out in 1977. Mirage, Tango in the Night, The Dance with their comeback album as a group. It was actually recorded on one night for an MTV special called
Wow,
The Dance.
So, that's impressive.
As opposed to their 1980 live album, which featured three songs that were recorded in Cleveland, Ohio on their tour from 1978-79.
Oh, okay.
So Fleetwood Mac, the band moved from California to England so they could, you know, manage things a little better, get a better hold on the American music scene. Mick began working with Keith Olsen, and after Bob Welch left the band, they started scouting around the L.A. music scene and came up with Lindsey and Stevie. A few of the songs on that album that were written prior to joining the band were Rhiannon, Monday Morning, and I'm So Afraid. So there's not a really bad track on that album.
No, there isn't.
It's a good one.
That's a terrific album.
76.
Monday morning, you showed up fine.
Say You Love Me and Rhiannon both hit number 11, but the album went to number one in the U.S., hit only number 23 in the U.K., though.
That's unusual.
So the move to California from London must have been a good move for them, business-wise. Now, then came Rumors, spelled the English way, you know, with the U. Perhaps to garner more publicity in the UK. It did go to number one there, which makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
Hit number one everywhere. There was internal strife, relationships going in, coming out. Who knew what was going on with anybody? Drugs were plentiful back then in the Sausalito scene. You know, the hippie movement was still kind of hanging on in the mid-70s. And
right.
They produced most of that album at the Record Plant, that famous recording studio in Sausalito.
Okay.
And so it was mainly recorded there. Everybody has their own favorites, but I think the whole album's outstanding.
Oh, I do too.
I think everybody's got a Rumors copy somewhere.
Absolutely.
An album, a CD. The Dance was one of my favorite live albums, even though it was recorded in one night, as we said, but the Rumors album was 20-time platinum. Features Go Your Own Way, Dreams, Don't Stop, and You Make Love and Fun. Thank goodness for those two songs at the end, because it was more of an upbeat, because the Dreams and the Chain, and they were kind of, you could tell they were
being dragged down. There's no doubt.
They had some trouble.
Yes, absolutely.
Then came Tusk. What'd you think of Tusk?
Well, it was a project. And beware when any group or artist has a project. And that was a project. And some like it, some don't. I think it's kind of hits on a few things, but misses mostly.
Lindsey Buckingham said that Warner Brothers apparently wanted Rumors 2, Rumors 3. So this was an experimental album of his that he thought might work. It was a double album. They had just enough material. I guess it was called their white album, even though it's kind of off-white in color.
Exactly.
Millions waited years of promotional. People were waiting for this album. And at the end, Tusk and Think About Me and Sarah. Those are all nice songs, but
yeah.
The album didn't perform that great. It was followed by some solo efforts. That live album we talked about, Stevie Nicks, Lindsey Buckingham, Christine McVie all went on their own. Stevie Nicks had the most success as a solo artist. And, you know, we talked about how Belladonna led to her induction in the Rock Hall.
That's right.
Just a few years ago.
Yeah, you could tell after Tusk that they were ready for, if not a breakup, at least a separation for a while.
For a while, yeah. And Stevie Nicks had her own things that she wanted to do. She felt bad leaving and kind of have to get talked back into doing stuff, kind of like Steve Perry after he got a taste of solo music. It's a grind being in a band.
Absolutely.
And that album, Rumors, must have just taken a lot out of them. And again, when you peak, it's so hard to follow that up. and your record company is putting pressure on you, you're touring. So Mirage came out in 1982, had more of that soft rock feel as compared to Tusk. Gypsy and Hold Me were two of their biggest hits. Not a lot written by Lindsey Buckingham. That was more of a Christine McVie, Stevie Nicks type of thing. What'd you think of that album, early 80s?
It's a good album. Like you said, though, it didn't have kind of the backbone that some of the others had because it didn't have a whole lot of Lindsey Buckingham tunes or look like participation.
I wonder if he was starting to save up some of his stuff for his own solo career. Maybe seeing Stevie Nicks and the success she had with Belladonna, and you knew that she had great things coming, and she didn't really need him anymore, did she?
That's right. And they were such a couple, and then they weren't a couple, that, yeah, that I can see how definitely he might have held back some material.
By the way, do yourself a favor on some time. If you want to listen to some good stuff, Lindsey Buckingham's albums were good. They're really, really good. Download some of those tunes, and I think you'll see what I mean. And if you ever get a chance to see him in concert, he plays at smaller venues when concerts are going to be on again. I would definitely recommend seeing Lindsey Buckingham in concert if he's still going to be touring.
Right.
So it was in 5 years. Until Tango in the Night, because of the solo projects and whatnot. I came out with Little Lies and Everywhere, Seven Wonders, and that song we called Big Love, which shows off his tremendous guitar work.
Oh, it's absolutely.
A big favorite at the live shows. And then The Dance came out. That was mainly a greatest hits package.
Exactly.
But still, really good. It's a two-sided set. It's a nice DVD if you get a chance to see it on PBS or whatever. It's certainly worth a watch, although
oh,
not all the songs are featured.
Mm-hmm.
Do it for this episode of Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. We hope you enjoyed our walk down memory lane, 1979, and Fleetwood Mac, our featured artist. Next time around, we'll continue our classic conversations. Next week, our featured artist is going to be Al Stewart. That's one of our 5 most downloaded episodes in Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. For Frank Ost, I'm Tim Friedman. We'll see you next time.